Hello, everyone, and welcome to Scope Winter 2024. Scope stands for Sound Century Objective Planning Event. This is the one in Winter 24. We're going to make this available through the Audiocast Network to all those who are interested in the state of sound, past sound and the future sound. I call this looking forward, and so here is my executive summary. Recording arts and sound design is not a lost art. In fact, besides the main goal of our organization to preserve, protect, and produce the past digital archives of master tapes, it is the ever-present objective to collect, create, cultivate, and curate the soundtrack of this present and future sound century with audio education and programming that is portable, professional, and passed on to future generations. Scope is our quarterly planning event. We have, for the first year, done these planning events by Zoom conferencing. And for the calendar year annual report, I have also met one-on-one with each one of the officers. I have published the financials, discussed objectives, renewed commitments by officers, and we will continue that planning. As many of you know, I have continued to fund Sound Century by raising support on creative production and sound design projects. I am happy to report to the treasurer that we have pledges for 2024 that promise to be around $24,000 for the year. This allows Sound Century to increase our retainer to Park Peters by $250 a month to $500 a month. This also allows Sound Century to continue on the Denver Folklore Center recordings. In 2023, donations finished at $10,000. Expenses for 2023 were at $4,800. Sound Century Studio was able to increase production and secured an internet connection, purchased Adobe Audition licensing, and purchased a custom-grade computer, bookbinding materials, and helped sponsor two summer concerts. There have been some repairs on audio equipment, and there is a line in the budget for perpetual license for Avid Pro Tools, a better interface, and a printer. While the budget will be a discussion and approval item, the next order of business is to list and describe the calendar list for objectives for 2024. In an age that is bent on artificial intelligence, Sound Century is handcrafting audio work through audio journalism, advertising, songwriting, and original music, audio theater, radio, audio publishing, and cinema soundtracks from original screenplays. The objectives for 2024 continue to bolster and create new programming, as well as add audio documentary, audio publishing, and educational audio resources. That's the overview of the budget and also the financials for 2023 and the budget for 2024. It is now time to look at some of our objectives, and I know some of them are mine, some of them are others, and I want to make sure that discuss these items one by one. I think one of the most intriguing ideas for Sound Century is the Studio Alliance. Each studio serves a different aspect of the Sound Century mission. I call this Master Mountain, where I am. My studio in Westcliff masters and creates, curates, and stores master tapes ready to be digitized. It is also a songwriter studio for Sound Century Music Publishing. It also is used for remotes and audio casts with some of the USB features and equipment. I have called this studio Masters Mountain since we store masters and master the digitized works. I do most of my voice work from this studio. You're getting it right now. Part of the Studio Alliance is KLZ FM, The Innovators. It's named for the first FM station to play rock music anywhere. I create, produce, and broadcast the programs from Aurora in Studio A at KLZ Radio. Audio Park Arvada, as you know, Park, as you hear this. Park is digitizing so many things. He also creates new music and other things as well. He's also an expert on Denver commercials and spots. And so I do want to take more advantage of that this year. LeBay Studios, or I call it the Abbey in Denver. Kevin LeBay and I have created a lot of different types of music, and Kevin has really done a wonderful job with our audio and music publishing parts of what Sound Century does. There has been an idea from Trevor Lacoste, our treasurer, to start the Sound Century Academy of Recording Arts in Lamar. There is an older building there that with some of the Lombardo tapes that we're getting from Jones Beach Marine Theater that I'm working on documentaries. Some of the things that Harry has given us, that this would be a good learning opportunity. There's some tapes that people can learn to digitize on, like some of the things that came from KFML Studios. Trevor and I have discussed applying for some grants for that building. It's a very large building. It's got a place for a soundstage and other things that we can do for the Lamar community, it being a really nice central place to store the tapes. It can be used as a learning center and also to pass these skills on. And I think what Park has done with some of these masters, what I'm doing with new shows and what Harry's doing with music, all of those things are so important. Recording arts and audio learning, I think, are paramount for what's going to happen in the next 10 years plus in media. I have been reading Jane McGonigal's book, Imaginable, How to See the Future Coming and Feel Ready for Anything, Even Things That Seem Impossible Today. The premise of McGonigal's book is to always be looking 10 years ahead. In order to do that, we have to look at what has happened in the last 10 years and the 10 years before that, and on and on and on through different areas of influence. In my realm of influence, I go back through media as a documentarian as well as a visionary. Everyone on our board reads, listens, and views the timeline with hands-on experience. We've been there. As I've said and written, Sound Century is not for nostalgia. It is to look back at history, learn from it, and speak truth into our culture. The time machine aspect puts a sound experience of reality in a concert hall, studio, place of worship, and a time in history. It could be a living room, a theater, and it shares it with others through our present and future technology. As I create new programming, advertising, and music, the vehicle or device will be different. As I look at what we've experienced and what we have and what we don't have, together we can create and recreate that sound experience and pass it on to future generations. When we honestly look at the state of media, it is obviously it's oversaturated with good and bad information. In the last 20 years, citizen journalism, unimaginative advertising, a mixed bag of music, video, talk radio, and a disregard for sound quality and design, unless it's cinematic, That's where the bar gets hired. The sound quality and design is, of course, continually raising the standard. I remember looking at color samples and logos for the visual thing when I was working in radio, which I'm still working in radio, but they were looking at images and branding, saying, what does the brand sound like? The next section of the Sound Century objective planning event, I want to give you some samples of what we are working on, the archives, as well as protecting those tapes and digitizing those tapes. Here's a little bit of a sampler of what Sound Century really sounds like and what people are experiencing.
I'm in cellar. Baby, well, I'm satisfied, tickled too. Sugar, just know I'm in love with you. Baby, know I'm satisfied and tickled too. Sugar, just know I'm in love with you. Baby, you know I've been great girl, she been. Well, little red hen, sit to little red rooster. Rooster, don't come round my chicken shack as much as you used to, rooster. And I ain't bad. I'm bad. I ain't bad. Red girls, you bad. Mama, I'm going downtown. My head caved in. Come back home now, be with a pocket full of tea. Baby, you know I'm going downtown with my hat kicked in. Well, now mama coming back home, now baby with a pocket full of tin. Baby, you know, man, I haven't been. Great girl, she been. I've been satisfied, take a two. Baby, just know that I'm in love with you. Baby, know I've been. Great girl, she been. I'm all satisfied. I've been satisfied and tickled to wow. Maybe just I know that I'm in love with you. Deep no bam, I bam, bam bam. Great girl, she bam.
Broadcasting System invites you to join with us on the main stage of the Marine Theater, Jones Beach, Long Island, where we have exclusively transcribed the formal opening of this great theater for its summer presentation of Showboat. Notables and important people from all walks of life have gathered here in the 8,200 seats to witness the first presentation of the musical classic Showboat. The theater is uniquely appropriate for the production of Showboat because its stage is surrounded by the waters of the Great South Bay, permitting for the first time a full-size replica of the original Cotton Blossom to be included in the performance. To conduct the formal opening ceremonies, which you are about to hear, we will present Jinx Falkenberg, celebrated model and star of radio and television. Jinx is a resident of Long Island and is especially regarded in this community for her many contributions to civic and welfare programs. Her appearance on the stage this evening is an annual event. She will introduce for us and the assembled audience Guy Lombardo, producer of Showboat, Oscar Hammerstein II, who wrote the play and lyrics for Showboat, and Mr. Robert Moses, president of the Long Island State Park Commission, who is responsible for the development of Jones Beach and the construction of this, one of the world's great outdoor theaters. And now to the center stage and Jinx Falkenberg.
Well, good evening. The Dodgers may be rained out tonight, but the Showboat goes on in the Marine Stadium. Well, I said the Dodgers may be rained out tonight, but the Showboat goes on right here in the Marine Stadium. And in all kinds of weather, this is still the most beautiful place I've ever seen. I think it's far more beautiful than Monaco, and if we only had a prince, then Grace Kelly might be Her Serene Highness of Jones Beach now. Of course, we don't have the gambling of Monte Carlo here, except on the Showboat. Show business itself is a bigger gamble than roulette. In roulette, at least, you have only to bet against the wheel, not against the weather. I think all of Long Island, and especially New York, owes a debt of thanks to Guy Lombardo, who has so often bet against all the elements, and always for the benefit of all New York, to bring us great shows to this most beautiful seaside playground in the whole world. Let's meet him now, the musical musician who has moved the Mississippi all the way from Louisiana to Long Island, Mr. Long Island, Guy Lombardo.
Thank you, Jinx. Well, thank you very much, Jinx, and ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Showboat. We're certainly happy that you're here, although the night... But we're certainly happy to have you here, and we hope you're going to like our show, Showboat. You know, Arabian Nights was quite a success. It had 2 years here, and it played to about 1 million people. When my brothers and I decided to do Showboat, we had a lot of things to contend with. We had to do an intimate show in this huge, beautiful amphitheater, and it took a lot of planning. This show was planned almost 10 months ago, and it seems that 10 months is a long time to do a show that lasts 10 weeks. But we've had wonderful help. We've had the help of Mr. Hammerstein, who wrote the lyrics, and Mr. Kern wrote the music, and Miss Ferber wrote the book. We've had great technicians. We've had the best of choreography. We've had the best scenic designers, and we've had great help from everyone. Now, I'm sure that tonight you're going to see Showboat done for the first time in its natural environment on the water. Now, in a moment, I want you to meet Mr. Hammerstein and Mr. Moses. They have been a great inspiration. Mr. Moses especially, who built this beautiful amphitheater, who built Jones Beach. I would say that it's probably one of his pet projects. Now, my brothers and I are certainly grateful that you're all here. I thank you for coming, and I hope you like Showboat. Thank you, Jinx Falkenberg.
Thank you very much, Guy Lombardo. And now let's meet the man whose poetry set to music all America knows by heart. And let's use his own lyrics from one of his great hits, South Pacific, to serenade him now on his Showboat tonight. We're in love, we're in love, we're in love, we're all in love with a wonderful guy named Oscar Hammerstein.
I'll do my best. Can you hear that? Showboat has played all over the world, in many cities, and for many years. And it's played in all kinds of theaters. But tonight, the performance will be unique and a first.
Do you remember me? because for the first time, Showboat will be played on a showboat. It will probably be the most realistic performance we've ever given. And yet in the theater, you must always use your imagination for one reason or another. And even though we sail in tonight on a real showboat, since showboats used to ply the Mississippi in the South and in the summertime, you will have to imagine the climate. You will have to imagine that it's warmer and that the wind is very still. And I think you will have a good time imagining and seeing what is real. And we certainly hope you enjoy our efforts. I would like at this time to express my gratitude to Guy Lombardo for his vision and courage in producing this play as he has produced it. And I want also to express my gratitude to a man we're indebted to for many things besides this beautiful theater, for beautiful roads and bridges, and comforts and beauty of all kinds in and around our city, Mr. Robert Moser.
Thank you very much, Oscar Hammerstein. It's very appropriate that this premiere of Showboat tonight at the Marine Stadium should be taking place on the longest day of summer, longest day of the year. Will be the shortest night, too, when you see this production, I'm sure. Our real host tonight, this modern Moses, who has added another commandment to the original 10, enjoy yourself, everybody. The pursuit of happiness was a part of our Declaration of Independence. We'd like you now to meet the man who has helped so many millions of New Yorkers catch the happiness that we all pursue. The man who always keeps his promise to deliver a promised land, Commissioner Robert Moses.
Jinx Falkenberg, Oscar Hammerstein, Guy Lombardo. On behalf of Herb Swope and Andrew Duke, who are my associates, the Long Island Park Commission, I welcome you here this evening. Jones Beach started about 27 years ago. And in all the time since then, we've been trying to improve it, to improve the access so that you could get here better, to add facilities of different kinds, and to take care of crowds that have run from the original 300,000 into the millions in recent years. Now, we began with a stadium here that some of you may remember. It was a wooden affair built during the Depression by the WPA, and it served as an experiment station. We tried all sorts of things here, as you will also remember. We tried shows and vaudeville and bands and one thing or another, and finally we got down to these dramatic productions. And when the wooden stadium gave out, we had enough support popularly and in the press and in Albany to get this permanent stadium that you see here this evening. And we began with A Night in Venice as the first show, and then we had the show in the last 2 years that you're familiar with, and now we have the show that we've always wanted. From the very beginning, we have wanted this show. We wanted Showboat, because it belonged here, it fitted here. And I think at the very start, that Oscar had some idea that this was too big a stage, that the intimate parts of the show would be lost here. And so they figured out having a good deal of the action on the showboat itself, which you will see shortly. So this great novel of Edna Ferber's, the music which we've been listening to for years, appears here this evening in what I think is an ideal setting. I want to congratulate all those who had a part in putting the show on, the cast, the executives of the commission, and of course, our partners in the enterprise, Guy Lombardo and Oscar Hammerstein. I'll let the show go on.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Robert Moses, for this and for so many, many things that we all appreciate so much and always have through the years and always will. We'd like to thank Guy Lombardo, whom you heard here at the beginning of the program. He's gone down into the orchestra pit to strike up the band, to start the music and start the showboat on its way. Thanks to Oscar Hammerstein for coming out here tonight for this very special debut. He didn't know it, but I told him as we were walking across the stage that there's a big screening of his great production, The King and I, in New York City tonight, but he is here for Showboat. And now, as Mr. Moses said, it's time for the show to go on, and we hope that the Showboat has a long, long and successful run, and that the weather will be very good the rest of the summer, so that all of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, everyone in the listening area and driving area can come on out with the family and have a wonderful day at Jones Beach and wind up the evening in the Marine Stadium looking and listening to this production of Showboat. On with the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have presented the voices of Miss Jinx Falkenberg, Mr. Guy Lombardo, Mr. Robert Moses, Mr. Oscar Hammerstein II, who cooperatively are presenting from the Marine Theater at Jones Beach on Long Island in New York, a classic spectacular production of Edna Ferber's Showboat. This giant amphitheater, which seats 8,200 people and is built on the shores of the Great South Bay, is uniquely adapted to the presentation of this immortal play. It is here that a stage of more than a third of an acre in size has been built in the middle of a lagoon of water. The Showboat itself has been built in accurate replica, and it plays an important part in the presentation. The opening performance is about to get underway as we leave the air, with Mr. Guy Lombardo now entering the orchestra pit, where his famed orchestra will be playing the music which has been provided by Jerome Kern and featuring the lyrics from this area. As the band begins, we invite you to come to Jones Beach this summer. This has been a transcribed presentation of Mutual, the network for all America.
The good and bad we pass on. of an era gone. Gone, I've lost. Count the cost, the good and bad.
These 20 songs, and you haven't gone into the studio with these 20, or
some of them I have, just with a drummer and a bass player, just to get them down in whatever form, so we can work with them. And then you know, as you go back and revisit them, they change. They probably won't change in arrangement too much, but you know. We'll see what kind of icing they need, and I'll try to be as simple with them as I can, just because I've been enjoying playing acoustic more. And, yeah. You know, there's a beauty in simplicity. You have to get over the cringe factor, but once you do and you think you've done good work, I think it's, you know, probably good to let the audience hear that rather than, you know, putting on the synths and string pads and, you know, all the things that one can do in the studio to enhance the insignificant.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's a good word for it, and a good point of view of it too. I appreciate that. I wanted to tell you about this. We had talked a little bit about your blues influences and, you know, back in the day, and, I sat in a storage unit, or actually stood in a storage unit, and he had two of them, storage units, of all these live concerts of the Denver Folklore Center. Harry Tuft. So Harry and I, he's on my board for Sound Century, and I have a nonprofit that we're digitizing a bunch of these live concerts for the next generation, and for our current generation as well, of course. But it starts off with Furry Lewis and some great stuff. And Harry did, this is back in the early 70s. You know, Furry's talking about Blind Lemon and all these guys. And Furry's pretty funny because he goes, I knew Blind Lemon before he died. But he also says some pretty profound things. And you do get a sense of what Jim Crow South was by hearing Furry's stories. And he does it with a sense of humor. But there's some gems there. You really get the feeling, you know, and what it was like to be, you know, whether it was a singer and a songwriter and a guy who was, you know, hopping trains back then or whatever, and the dangers there were, but he loved it so much that he kept on doing it, and he kept on writing, and he kept on playing music. And he didn't like the road much, but that's one. And I have like 2 hours of Furry Lewis in concert at the Denver Folklore Center. And so we just finished digitizing. We're gonna try to look for a label that is willing to take these things, because I'm not a marketer. I'm not one of those kind of people that does those things.
Did you go to Smithsonian?
We haven't yet. And you know, Harry's on Folk Legacy, so I know he's done at least one album for Folk Legacies. There's Taj Mahal, and you know, Taj is actually somebody you can actually go to and at least talk to his people, you know. So but yeah, I mean it was around that era of 76 where he was doing Satisfied and Tickle Too, that stuff, really good stuff. Just to hear them, they were slightly before my time. And it's kind of like listening to your albums, your early albums. I had a whole new appreciation for the music because I was hearing the original stuff. And to hear these concerts is that same thing. It's almost like a time machine, but it's sort of like I'm at 65. I'm learning new stuff from these artists who I always loved, but now it's like three dimensional, So it's great. So as far as artificial intelligence and technology, I really like this digital thing where these tapes that are going to turn to dust have a chance. You know, it's really up to us to be the kind of curators of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, and the beauty of it is that you can put them online, not unlike the way the Library of Congress and Smithsonian have done, to make them readily accessible to everybody. And that's a real luxury, you know.
I mean, yeah, it is.
You know, in the seemingly old days now, I mean, whenever I was in D.C., I'd go to the Library of Congress and go to the folk archives and see, you know, what they had. They'd have bins that had, you know, typed sheets of the new additions to the library.
Right.
And it was great. I mean, right, I read on one of the sheets that they had Chief Joseph singing, and I was blown away. And I said, you know, how do I get to hear this? And they looked it up and they said, well, they're still on cylinders down in the basement. You'd have to make an order for them. And I was like, really? How much? And they said, oh, it might be kind of expensive. It might be, you know, $25 or so. And it's like, whoa, make it happen. And so I had a tape and a cassette of Chief Joseph singing The Nez Perce Are Coming. And they were all, you know, this was done by a woman named Alice Fletcher, who came out in, to the Northwest in the 1880s, I guess. And she had a hand cranked tape recorder, a cylinder recorder, right? Kind of like the old dictaphones were. And so she recorded Chief Joseph and, you know, some of the other Nez Perce. And, you know, it was just a thrill to hear him singing. I wish that they had him speaking, but no one understood Sahoption, which was the language that they spoke. And so, you know, they went for the songs because they thought the songs might hold some interest.
Wow. You know, it's all right. I mean, you can only see the White House so many times. You can only see everything else. But the Smithsonian, you could probably spend 3 years there to go through everything.
That's an endless vacation. But if you're ever there and you have you know, a couple hours, just out of curiosity, you know, go to the Library of Congress in the folk archives. It's just, it's a, you know, small couple of rooms, and they have all of their, you know, all of the stuff available there that you can listen to. I don't know what it's like now, but I'm sure it's, you know, more technical than it was when I was there. But it's just a lot of it's online, and it's just this huge wealth of what we as Americans own. You know, it's our property.
Yeah.
And you know, it's the process of how music came out of the dirt and, you know, became part of our influencing processes. I learned so much from that stuff. I mean, whether it's field hollers or shanties or, you know, Indian songs, whatever, you know, I mean, it's the real stuff. And it has the power to be very influential for that reason.
Singer-songwriter Danny O'Keefe. The power of archival material.
Through calm, thoughtful, theological conversations, Thinking Christian offers a mix of interviews and discussions that highlight the ways God is working in the lives of his people and question the underlying social, cultural, and political assumptions that keep the church from conforming more closely to the image of Christ.
Hello, this is Richard Beatty with the story of the longest-running media outlet in Denver, the Front Range, and perhaps in the continental United States of America. KLZ took to the airwaves prior to March 10th, 1922. Yet, as one of a dozen radio stations around the country, was among the first stations to go on air and stay there The continuing story of KLZ Radio is the real story here. From the moment Doc Reynolds mentioned KLZ, it had traversed the airwaves in a relay of owners, hosts, formats, and genres. In the first program, we documented the first few legs of that relay. In this episode, we go the distance, starting with perhaps the most fascinating story of all, KLZ-FM, the first to pioneer rock and roll on the FM dial anywhere, moving forward with album-oriented rock, when Bill Gardner took to the studio and flipped a switch from classical to new classic rock and roll. This was so momentous an event that we have dedicated two half-hour shows full of interviews, music, and air checks, KLZ-FM, The Innovators. I'm Richard Beatty, and this is the Sound Century. This is Richard Beatty, and you're listening to The Sound Century. Rock and roll came to Denver FM bands on August 4th, 1965, and was right here on KLZ. You're listening to The Sound Century. Here's Bill Gardner.
Well, you know what I can't believe about Denver? That Denver does not really know, for the most part, that they really pioneered and, in essence, invented rock and roll on FM.
Right.
And I mean, that was such a crazy idea back then, because it was all classical music. Okay, I put KLZ-FM on the air in August 1965, played the first record, California Girls by the Beach Boys, and we were off and running.
Indeed. This is Richard Beatty. This is a Sound Century.
Here he comes. There's the trumpet, there's the drum. Here he comes. Hop along, Cassidy.
Hello, everyone. This is Richard Beatty, and this is the Sound Century. The Jefferson County Law Enforcement Journal. November 1937. For some time, KLZ Radio out of Denver has been broadcasting a morning program called Rocky Mountain Roundup to the mountain ranches and communities to the west of Denver. On November 18, 1937, KLZ 560 at 6 a.m. each morning broadcasts to all law enforcement concerns in patrolling to remote areas that need attention. The Rocky Mountain Roundup on KLZ 560 to serve and protect your home on the Front Range. This is the Sound Century, KLZ 560. I'm Richard Beatty.
What a wonderful experience is spring in Colorado.
That makes it all worth doing. Greetings from Westcliff. As we close the year of 2023, we can look back at the year with a lot of fondness. Some of the memorable digital mastering was quite good and allows Sound Century to focus on how to market and distribute the wonderful concerts from Harry Tuff's collection. Sound Century Audio Network has had a respectable year, and the creative production and distribution saw marketable growth. Sound Century, the audio network, changed its name to Audiocasts because it is a hybrid between radio and podcasting. Sound Century's studio achieved the lion's share of donations, by creating, producing, and distributing broadcasts and podcasts, which is forecast to top $24,000 in this coming year. We were able to upgrade equipment, including a custom-built computer that is mission control for that studio. At the end of the year, we will add a Focusrite USB interface, which we did in the studios, and now 70% of shows are produced from the studio here in Westcliff. The microphone, my workhorse here in the studio, is an Audio Technica. Very good. It works very well with the Focusrite and also with the Adobe software that we have for Audition for the editing software. I produce two daily shows for 5 days a week, weekly shows, and a new docuseries called From Broadway to Jones Beach, which will premiere in June. One of our new daily podcasts is Dr. James Spencer and my programming, Thinking Christian. That shows on Life Audio and has surpassed averaging 7,000 downloads a month. In broadcasting on our Denver stations, we will continue Counseling Culture, and that is actually going to be a public affairs, really addressing the mental health crisis in the Denver area and along the Front Range and getting help for people. We are also continuing Folk Process and Useful to God on Denver Radio. You heard the excerpt from Danny O'Keefe on the importance of archiving and saving this wonderful history of sound. Sound Century Music Publishing saw some creative growth in 2023. We published and recorded 17 new songs. Harry Tuft and Richard Beatty performed together here in Westcliff at the All Aboard Westcliff facility, which is like a train station. It was a great place. And also, Harry asked me to join him at Harry and Friends at Swallow Hill, and that was what a great experience that was. I've been able to perform some of my music as well. We are also working with Mountain Celtic Strings here in Westcliff. We're going to be doing a Burns night this week, the Robert Burns birthday, complete with canned haggis and other things. A dozen Robert Burns songs a cappella, as well as just an instrumental. So I have a just voice and a just guitar volume. We did have some disappointments that we will learn from, but for now, we bask in the sound of Taj Mahal, Pete Seeger, Furry Lewis, Tom Paxton, Rosalie Sorrells, and our friend Harry Tuft. You heard Taj Mahal earlier. One of the disappointments of the year was losing out on the Guy Lombardo Museum in Lamar, Colorado. That's one that our good friend and treasurer, Trevor Lacoste, he put a valiant effort in, but the Lombardo family went ahead, donated the legacy of the Royal Canadians to a Texas university. As many of you know, I grew up with the Lombardo family at Jones Beach Marine Theater. My first boss was Guy Lombardo. One of the Sound Century projects that I have always wanted to do was to do an audio documentary about that experience at Jones Beach Marine Theater, and before me and after me. And the larger than Broadway shows produced by the Lombardos. One of the best stories is that the Lombardo brothers would bring the band from 1954 to 1977, and I found out later it was actually in the 60s when that happened, in what is known as the longest running homestand in big band history. Louis Armstrong in the 60s did Mardi Gras at Jones Beach Marine Theater, which was a show written by Carmen Lombardo, Guy Lombardo's brother. He was signing the contracts. He told Guy Lombardo, "My band's going to lose their chops. What are we going to do?" And so Lombardo came up with this idea to have a dance tent And both bands, the Royal Canadians and Louis Armstrong's band, played every night after the show. Well, that was a tradition at Jones Beach Theater, not with Louis Armstrong, although Louis Armstrong attended a lot of the musicals at Jones Beach Theater up until a couple of weeks before he passed away in Queens, New York. And we're going to be documenting a lot of those wonderful tracks that Louis Armstrong did. Every year, the scenes that were staged on the main stage, which was a quarter mile from the audience, they would record those, and we will have those recordings that we're digitizing. They were recorded at Columbia Studios, the church where Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, and Billie Holiday sang, and then all the way up to Miles Davis and some of the great jazz recordings. Every Broadway recording, and they were recorded so well, were done at Columbia in Manhattan, Columbia Studios. And they called that the church because it was a cathedral. It was a Presbyterian church, and they had the high ceilings, and it could accommodate a full cast, a full orchestra, and a lot of these great jazz and big bands. Well, those are the recordings that by the end of this week, the week of the 25th, by Friday, we will have the first 15 of those masters that Park will be working on, and we'll be working on that for the audio documentary. And on a personal note, that was where I had my first recording session as a member of the cast of The Sound of Music. Those recordings will be moved from the Lombardo Estate in Florida to Audio Park Studios in Arvada. I was going to say Arvada. I've been busy writing the script, interviewing some people. I have Constance Towers tomorrow in the studio in Denver. I also have a bunch of programs so far. I'm going to get all of the programs, what timepieces they are. This is going to be a labor of love. It's also going to be a lot of work, and I'm looking forward to that work. There are also original scores programs, radio shows that make this series a treasure. And there are hundreds of stories to be told from Jones Beach, just like the concerts from the Denver Folklore Center. And now the things that we need to really address for the coming year in the coming 5 years. I was asked to write a 5-year plan from my 65th year on this earth to my 70th year, 2024 to 2029. At 65, I must start looking to succession, and I must look at our aging board. I love y'all, but we have not done a very good job in getting the next generation interested in recording arts. I have no doubt that there are many people considered as audio learners. When I look at my own life, when I look at Swallow Hill, there are a great many people who are under 30 years old who are learning an instrument, recording, and sound design. I see that in churches, in art centers, and in schools. There are still going to be commuters and travelers who will listen to curriculum, audiobooks, and music while they travel. There will also be a need for audio learning. How then do we pursue audio learning as a means to either subdue or enhance artificial intelligence? I think that question is intriguing in my 5-year plan. I had a dream that Think Radio would save radio from itself. Thoughtful and useful conversations, people recording their reports, business people recording their business plans, and annual reports like this annual report. In the next 5 years, my performances and concerts will be recorded and sent out to people. I love song circles. Harry is a genius at those song circles. Or playing with community, and I love sharing. But I do this each week on air during Folk Process and all the other programs. While succession is important, monetizing what we do is also important. Right now, I am doing what I was told not to do, is to use my production and my work that I do with new programming to pay for what we're doing with the archives and also with Sound Century. I want to be able to take this time, where we have about 4 minutes left. I want to take this time to open that up. Number one, succession. How are we going to really work on audio learning as a recording arts center? How are we going to be able to cast that vision out for the next Sound Century, which may not be able to be really discussed during our meeting? We are going to sustain the amount I give to Park for archiving and digitizing. That is of utmost importance. I also want to make sure that we keep Harry's legacy going with that, and also all those musicians. I continue to interview wonderful singer-songwriters and folk musicians. I realize myself that I am more of a folk musician now than I was when I joined the Denver Folklore Center back in 1978. That is such an important thing, because it is. It's that passing it on. You heard the song Pass It On earlier in this show. I think music publishing, audio publishing, so important right now. How are we going to get there? As I mentioned at the very beginning of our program, the book Imaginable is actually came from the phrase that it's unbelievable. Why are things unbelievable? We should be planning for 10 years ahead, and whether we're here or not 10 years from now. So I value your ideas. I really want to hear what you think the next 10 years could look like, how much of a difference we can make in those next 10 years, thinking about what media is going to be like, what we're going to be listening to. I think about when I got the JBL speakers in the studio set up, I started listening to music again. And I was thinking about the things that we're missing in this Sound Century. And everybody's listening on their little phone, on their earbuds. But what about that experience as far as hearing it right from the speakers, opening an album, all of those things that people, because the sound was so good, theater and audio theater. I know that I love doing, I love presenting, and the things that I miss, I have said it before. I knew that I was going into sound design and audio theater because of the imagination. Oscar Hammerstein on this broadcast here has talked about, no matter where you are in the theater is a place where you imagine. You can close your eyes and hear it. That's the thing that I realize that we need to pass on to the next generation. That was Looking Forward. And I hope you enjoyed it. I did score the first 15 minutes of this just on guitar, and I hope you enjoyed that as well. I hope this is enjoyable. This is the first time we've tried an audio annual report. I just think that we ought to put our money where our mouth is, where our microphone is. I enjoy working with every one of you. I enjoy reaching out to this audience on radio, on podcasting, and in audiobooks. Thank you very much. Looking forward to a new year of continuing this wonderful journey of sound. We are moving in sound. Take care.